Hello, and welcome to Geek Between the Lines, the podcast where we explore compelling ideas and some of our favorite geeky properties. I'm Chris.
And I'm Brittany.
And this week we are continuing our watch through of The Magicians, looking at Season 4, Episode 2, Lost, Found, Fucked. Britt, why don't you let us know what happens in this episode to cause such an interesting title?
So we find out that the monster is on a quest to track down gods who took something from him, bringing Quentin / Brian along with him. In Fillory, Lord Fresh shows Margot her birthright box, and she leaves in search of Ember. After she's caught by the royal guards, she works with an unsure Tick and Fen to find Ember, but instead find Bacchus, pretending to be the Fillorian god. At Breakbills, Marina 23 and Penny / Hansel fail to retrieve the antidote for the identity spell from Fogg, but successfully use the potion on him. Fogg says his goodbyes before he loses his identity and memory, but Julia finds out it is Fogg's perpetual battery keeping the protective spell working. She dies and resurrects herself several times to overload the battery and is able to restore everyone's memories. Newly recrowned High King, Margot is kicked back to Earth by Bacchus, who wishes to rule Fillory as its new god. Meanwhile, Quentin asks the monster to spare his friends, which makes the monster jealous and angry. So he teleports them to Marina's flat with plans to kill them all. So, yeah, pretty appropriate title, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, why don't we start with our magic moments, though? What were your magic moments this episode?
Oh my goodness, there's so many things. I did find it really amusing, Fogg's whole automatic call when Marina was trying to break the spell.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, automatically puts it on speakerphone. You can't change the volume. You can't, like, disregard or, you know, any of that. But it's also hilarious because she's like, oh, this couldn't be protecting his favorite students, could it? Like, Fogg, get someone else to do that call because it's really obvious now.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the cute little piggy that clearly liked Hale Appelman. He's trying to act like this creepy, aloof god. And the piggy's like, oh, let me, like, put my little snout on your nose. And I'm like, oh, so cute.
Very cute.
I did love seeing when we first see Fen. She just, like, walks into the room with such authority, which is what we didn't see before.
Totally.
And we're not really exactly sure how much time has passed in Fillory, but clearly, yeah, she's been able to grow a lot and fill that role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure both of us have a lot of great quotes.
Absolutely.
So maybe we can go back and forth so I don't take them all.
Okay.
So, Margot, stranded in Fillory, doesn't know Fillory, doesn't know where she is or anything, but gets that she's in some fantastical, magical place and says, the forests don't even talk. My psychotic break lacks imagination. And then says, this pond better be vodka.
Yes, very, very good. When she's talking to Lord Fresh, back up, Shape of Water.
Yeah, yes.
Very, very good.
While holding her shoe, a stiletto, up as a weapon,
of
which
course.
Is also amazing because before, when they had the, like, regicide curse on them, Elliot went to Benedict and he was like, I need a stiletto, you know, a weapon to sneak up and stab someone with. So
yes.
It was just so great that she used her version of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just so much with Penny 23 as Hansel.
Every line.
Whatever happens, thank you for trying, with a big smile. It's just not Penny.
Not at all. Yeah. When he was traveling and he just goes, how am I doing this? So good.
And when he was talking to Marina, he's like, I don't know why you're risking yourself for us, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah. He says that a few times. Mm-hmm. A little pause. Pretty cool.
No, I know.
When he's like, things are pretty cool.
But then the whole backstory where he had sex with his stepsister or whatever, and then someone was talking about like, oh, what, do you need to get to having sex with your groupies or whatever? And he said, that is not what Hansel is about.
Like, exactly.
He is his brand. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. It's just... Referring to himself in his third person is always a good thing.
Yes.
And just his bi when they're teleporting away from Breakbills and he just has this big exuberant wave and he's like, bye.
I know.
Amazing.
Happy sociable Penny.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially next to Marina is very funny.
You know, he's like, oh, is there anything I can do to help? And she's just like, yeah, take off your shirt and make me a sandwich.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, so good. Yeah, their interactions are so great because in real life, him and Marina, you know, they're very different, but they could react similarly to certain things, you know, roll their eyes at certain things or not have time for the extra flowery language or whatnot, but here, him being this incredibly different person, that was a really good pairing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I also loved when Fogg describes the different timelines that he's experienced, and he says that they range from the comically horrendous to the apocalyptically absurd, which is great because both of them feature something awful and also hilarious, which is just this world. every season is ranges from comically horrendous to apocalyptically absurd.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Very good.
Also, when Quentin is trying to summon Anulias, and Monster Elliot just says, pray a little harder, please. It's just so great.
Yes, yes. I also put down Monster Elliot talking to the pig and be like, oh, time to die. Yes, it is. Give me a little goodbye kiss.
I know.
So good.
It's like they had to do something because this little piggy's so friendly.
Exactly.
Yeah, on the note of Elliot, I just loved the final shot before they transported to the apartment. Is just this kind of pan towards Elliot and Q, but the focus first is this shot of just the poor little pig friends and trolls and blood on this altar, and then it pans up to see Monster Elliot and Quentin, where he's just leaning on Quentin's shoulder and Quentin has even more blood on him than before, and it's just like this really disturbing shot, but so again, yeah, comically horrendous. That, yeah, it was just a great shot. And then the end of that scene, I just love that when Quentin asks, when you get back what these gods took from you, do you think I could maybe get Elliot back? And Elliot's reaction is so clearly angry, and he like gets that under control and then just answers, good. And they teleport, but it's like cut off teleportation. It just is so like, oh no. Like, it just leaves you with such an ominous feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very, very great. There also were surprisingly some good Todd moments.
Right.
Where he's still dressing like Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he knows who Hansel is, as he's exclaiming about that, Marina just immediately puts him to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's watching Julia continually get killed over and over again. And it starts out, he's so, you know, concerned about, oh, don't do it. And then he gets less and less concerned, not even watching anymore. Then he has headphones on, you know. It was a great little sequence to show the passage of she's doing this a lot and a good use of Todd.
Absolutely. And I just love how he can't keep any secrets.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you? Did you have any other magic moments you were thinking about?
I also enjoyed when Quentin/Brian is with the monster, and anytime he does something that is violent or magical or just like wild, Brian knows enough not to challenge him, but still is clearly concerned. Especially he'll like bring a cigarette out and like light it because he's just like stressed about the situation. Yeah, I just thought it was a good performance of someone who is too afraid to speak out, but is still reacting in ways that show the horror of the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fact that he lights Quentin's cigarette. Mm-hmm. The writers were just having so much fun after the whole mosaic timeline. They're just like, we're gonna have Quentin have to lick Elliot's ice cream cone, we're gonna have Elliot light his cigarette, like all of these like very flirty sort of behaviors.
Yeah. But why don't we move into our setting and society section? What did you bring?
So cool just getting to learn little tiny little snippets of different types of magic that we haven't really seen before. So there's obviously the very interesting one where Alice is able to see what the cockroach sees, as well as magical tailoring.
So cool.
So cool. The fact that they could embed the smell of Fogg's grandmother's huckleberry pie into a suit. Like, it's just, ooh.
And yeah, we see someone who has a career around magical tailoring and how valuable that is. And yeah, it's just a very, very cool element to add into the world that you could go into a magical career that doesn't have to do with the study of magic, but instead is using it in like an artisan style. Very cool.
Another thing that I just thought was interesting is how Fogg tattooed Penny to not be able to travel. And I think on the one hand, you're like, well, all of them have their identities taken away, and so him not knowing that he's a magician and a traveler could be quite dangerous for his life. So it could potentially save his life.
Yeah.
But on the other side, it's just another additional way that he is used, and things are done to him without his consent as a slightly different species. Another disturbing layer.
Yeah, where Penny lost his identity, but also his bodily autonomy.
What about you? What were you noticing?
Yeah, I was also noticing elements of the enchantment that I found really interesting. The fact that Brian, Quentin, had a job and a girlfriend was really interesting.
Oh, he said he had a girlfriend. I didn't even hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me think, like, is this someone who he met after the spell took place? Or is this someone who had a backstory of having a girlfriend? And so, you know,
he thinks he has one.
Yeah, because,
you
know, that's the thing. Each of these characters have their own lives, which means that they have their own supporting cast that engages with them in different ways. We saw, for example, Katie's partners and, like, other cops who worked with her alongside there. Like, that's a relationship. Were there other romantic relationships, family relationships that were forced upon other people about these made-up versions of them? What is that like? Is that a way of stealing those people's autonomy, agency, and so forth? You know, is this a, you know, was his girlfriend a woman who met him and developed a relationship with him because of that? Or was it someone who was forced into a relationship with him in some way? Yeah, it just, you know, raises these wider questions about such a kind of reality warping kind of spell.
Yeah, or is it like, oh, this character has a girlfriend, but we're going to say that she's working in some other country, so she'll email you sometimes and then she'll break up. You know, I don't know.
Totally. Yeah, who knows?
It does get very convoluted when these fake people are interacting with the world.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who is Hansel's stepsister? You know, like, is this a person who existed beforehand and then now has a stepbrother who they have rumors about them with? Like, how is that going to impact their life? Like, yeah, it's just, it raises a lot of questions that I don't expect the show was ever going to answer, because that's not the point. But it's one of those fun things where, like, oh, taking this seriously, let's actually think about the implications.
Yeah, for sure.
I also appreciate how, talking about those implications, we do see the impacts on Fillory, where Fillory still has a ton of people who remember a High King whose name they can't say.
Yeah.
Who they have no idea what happened to. And I think that that's really, really interesting to see the kingdom dealing with these crises without Margot there. And then to have Margot, or someone claiming to be Margot, show up is, yeah, just really, really kind of different dynamics than each of them in their own places in Earth society. You know, Fillory is a place that it's very, very different taking them out of Fillory and then putting them back in Fillory.
Mm-hmm. But also a place where it's easier for them to entertain the idea that, yes, this could be Margot. Mm-hmm. Because they know about magic in a way that the rest of the people surrounding most of the other characters on Earth wouldn't think magic was a thing, you know?
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, that's very interesting. You kind of sound like Margot's attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, in her absence, Fillory's changed because of Bacchus and what he's doing. This has been going on for a while and hasn't been addressed. Margot gets there and it's addressed immediately, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that's my last point, is just the return of quote-unquote Ember.
Mm-hmm.
But how Bacchus engages in Florian partying, turns up the opium in the air. Yeah, going to parties and orgies and everything. Like, he's being even less of a beneficial god than Ember was, because he cares even less about Fillory,
mm-hmm.
right? He can go in and just care about the parties and, you know, what he wants to do, and not about the land, because he didn't create it. It's not his land. He's still a visitor to it. And I think that it's just an interesting distinction between these two gods that have a lot of similarities. Yeah, the distinctions between them and in their situations make it so that Bacchus doesn't just take Ember's place, but is even more destructive in some ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how appropriative it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fen mentions that all of these people in Fillory think that their god has returned, this god that was dead, and that's now going into their own cultures and theologies, right?
Yeah.
And it's not true. As well as, it's very interesting that this energetic emanation situation was already set up, because mm-hmm. one of those situations was, there's an invading god from another planet. And so when I first watched the show, I was like, oh, there's this. It's because the monsters escaped the castle, and that's why there's this thing. But now I'm like, actually, I think it's just because of Bacchus.
Yeah.
So,
absolutely,
interesting.
Yeah. All right, well, why don't we head into our themes and schemes? What did you bring to discuss?
So I think a theme that is fairly clearly laid out by Lord Fresh is this prediction that Margot will learn what it is to live and rule alone.
Mm.
Even before the spell was broken, she's alone transported to this other place, compared to being with the group that's all trying to figure out what's going on with them. Like, she is alone, and it's scary, and she doesn't know where she is and what's going on with her eye and all of that. And then when the spell is broken, she so quickly, like, doesn't even skip a beat. She just jumps back into ruling and questioning a god.
Yeah.
And because of that, she's sent away again, you know? And so I think that it's setting up a journey for Margot. It's not like, oh, her journey's done because she became High King. She was voted in.
Yeah.
It's, no, there's still more for her character to do and ways to grow, which I appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, she's going to have to do that struggle alone, you know, when obviously she's Janet at the time, but when Fen and Tick, you know, see her in her cell, she was captured. She is not exactly believed. And it's not a warm reunion. It is a reunion in which she is singled out amongst everyone else. Fen was the acting High King, but when Margot is crowned again, Fen kneels, just like mm-hmm. everyone else. And that puts her as separate from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's very isolating, even as she is then singled out by Bacchus mm-hmm. and sent away.
I think another thing that I find interesting thematically is right before the quote you were talking about from Fogg about the comically horrendous mm-hmm. and all of that, he said magic has been a series of disappointments, which is such an interesting thing to say right after they've turned magic back on. Mm-hmm. The way that he's talking about things in his life and then finally this Taylor that he talks to, she points out he can hardly stand himself and the suits and the hand-sewn shirts and all of that is an armor that keeps people away.
Mm.
But also she said, so no one can really see how much you care, which is interesting because I hadn't really thought about maybe comparing Fogg and Penny at all.
That is interesting.
But from, little things here or there, it sounds like magic comes from pain comes back around. And the conversation that Quentin with Emily Greenstreet, you know, magic just makes things worse and it creates a new problem and then you use magic to fix that problem and then you have to, you know, and so I think it's, maybe a continuing theme that even though there are cool things like these suits that can smell like your grandmother's mm-hmm. pie recipe, overall, for someone who has been so heavily involved in magic, who was involved in getting magic turned back on, still describes it as a series of disappointments, which is, interesting, and I'm curious to kind of track that a little more.
That is interesting.
The last theme I was thinking about is, Josh and his fake identity supposedly has a really big penis.
Mm-hmm.
Then when Katie's explaining her whole supposed life, he says, why would you want to give that up? Because, you know, it sounds perfect. And she says, it sounds fake.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a Katie thing, you know, like she's had such a hard life. And so even though she doesn't have those memories yet, her personality is still going to not trust the shiny things because they sound fake. And so I'm curious if this idea of people, you know, wanting to believe certain things based off of what they want versus what they think is true or real, if that comes up throughout this season.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And it is such a Katie thing to be frustrated with insincerity
mm-hmm.
With fakeness. She is the one who talked about how her and Penny didn't fit in, that they weren't a part of the group, how she's not just going to fake those friendships, and she's not going to pretend like she and Julia are okay when she still doesn't feel that way. You know, she
mm-hmm.
she's not going to fake any of her relationships. She's not going to fake anything that's going on in her life. And so having a life that feels fake, that feels insincere, definitely it sounds like something that Katie, of all the characters, would be willing to fight against.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about you? What themes were you thinking about?
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about Fog's goodbyes. How Fog, in many ways, is saying goodbye to his life, to the people in it, but also to the way that he lived his life in many ways. He doesn't have a lot of good friends. So we see that he gives, you know, his prized scotch to someone who he drank with a couple of times. Right? He's like, he says this is the best drinking buddy he's ever had.
Because they never talk.
Exactly. And we see him, say goodbye to this tailor, not saying goodbye out loud, not telling her that he's saying goodbye, but wanting to see her one last time. Mm-hmm. He rips his suit in order to be able to call her, to have her come and fix it. And in many ways, I found it really interesting how she talks about these suits and everything, like this armor, this disguise that he puts on himself. Because in this episode, we see him put away that armor in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. He is honest because he knows he's losing his life.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's honest about his relationships, the people he's around. He punches a dude, right?
A professor.
Yeah, exactly. But he's also honest about himself, right? He talks about how he's an alcoholic, a degenerate gambler. He's violent. He's not putting on airs. He's not trying to perform. He's mm-hmm. just doing what he, you know, is most true to him.
Yeah.
And it, in a way, it's seeing him be his sincere self without that armor mm-hmm. in a really interesting way.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's true. Yeah, it's almost like he's writing a library book.
Mm.
You know, capital L library. Because, yeah, he's giving all this information that he wouldn't write if he was writing himself and gonna have to live with it. But he's gonna write what actually is, but that people can access without having a library card, theoretically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I just think it's a really fascinating episode to follow him and to see kind of him break down those walls in those different ways. And then to talk about his regrets.
Mm-hmm.
Because he says that one of his most recent regrets is the spell, and that he did this in a way that is hurtful to these students who he prizes. But even though that's the case, and even though now it's going to get rid of his identity, he believes that ending the spell would put their lives in danger. And that's something he refused to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a really powerful moment for Fog to make, in many ways, what is his last choice.
Mm-hmm.
Is the choice to give up his identity, to give up his life, because it's the only way he can think of protecting or helping mm-hmm. these students who he's failed in multiple ways. And to have him saying this to Julia in particular mm-hmm. is, I think, a very poignant way of illustrating that.
And I think, too, that maybe it would be different if Julia showed any magical ability currently, mm-hmm. you know, because he tells her, I can't figure out a way, but you will.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that he does have faith in her that maybe if anyone in the world could make this right, it'll be Julia.
Mm.
And he has faith that her magic will come back, you know? And talking about him being honest with Todd writing his memoir or whatever, or getting on the notes for it, something that is left out, which is huge, is this perpetual battery.
Mm.
He doesn't mention it because Todd didn't know that he had completed that aspiration. So yeah, it's very interesting that even though we find out early in the first season that he taught himself magic
mm-hmm.
when he was like 4 or 5 or something. So he's very skilled. He's a quote-unquote master magician. He can live through and remember time loops and all of that. But so much of what he was recounting to Todd to write down were, yeah, much more personal things. It wasn't about what he achieved, but who he was.
Yeah. Yeah, and so maybe this is making me think that the season is trying to grapple with questions of identity, and that starting the season with these two episodes is a way of kind of setting that thematic stage. Yeah, I found it very, very interesting that that's was part of it. The other thing I think that I've been thinking of is the last discussion between Quentin and the monster, where the monster says that Quentin really understands him and that it's good to have a friend. Which, of course, Quentin is now in a position where he's having to play the friend, mm-hmm. but also, to what extent can he advocate for his friends, for Elliot in particular? And I think that is also very, very interesting, this idea of what does it mean to have a friend? You know, you talked about Margot being alone, you know, without friends, mm-hmm. Which she's kind of being put up. Quentin is the only friend for this monster, and that is a very loaded term. You know, what a friend for this monster means, when being that friend is the only thing keeping you alive. And, and yeah, you know, are these other members of the group connected to one another? In what ways are they connected? All of those, I think, are just interesting questions. So yeah, I think that's something that I'm going to... Those are two themes I'll keep keeping an eye on, like identity and friendship, and how those tie in with community or isolation.
Hmm. Yeah.
But why don't we head into our last major section, from another point of view. Whose perspective did you bring to discuss?
So I was thinking about two people in particular, but kind of linked in some of what they're thinking or experiencing, perhaps. Mm-hmm. First, the monster.
Mm.
Because, like you were saying, even if it's not necessarily how we would define a friend, which is essentially, you're there to do whatever I want and watch me do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But we know part of this creature's essence is wanting things. Mm. It just wants and wants and wants. But here we find out that there's something more particular that the monster wants. Yes, he wants his ice cream cones with sprinkles, but, and he'll kill people over it and whatnot. And, you know, there's games, he wants to be entertained and all of that, but he wants something that was taken from him.
Mm.
And it was taken from him in a way that makes him not even know what it was, but that there's still something missing. There is a vacancy that he can't name, he doesn't understand, but he knows it's in relation to these gods, and they made it happen. And so, yeah, I was thinking about how, even with all of this power that he has, and he has so much power, he has so much power that even the gods are scared of him.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't have power over whatever this was, and he was made vulnerable, and he hates the gods for this thing that they did to him, and he doesn't exactly even know what he's angry about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found his perspective, like, more sympathetic than previously. Obviously, Hal Appelman as him is delightful. Perfect. So I've always loved the monster. Well, would never be a quote-unquote friend of the monster. But thinking about, yeah, this feeling of loss that he has but can't name, and then thinking about that also with Marina.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we met Marina in the first season, she was trying to get her memories back from Breakbills. memories, magic that was forcibly taken from her. And she was livid about it. And she did completely unethical things to get it. Here, too, even though her timeline 23, was slightly different. It wasn't, everything didn't happen the same way for Marina, but she also was a hedge because she had been kicked out of Breakbills and all of that. And so then to change timelines, get into timeline 40, yay, there's no Beast, and then there's no Beast 2.0 as Quentin, and not everyone is dead, and all of that, but still come face to face with the person who kicked her out of school and took her memories, also took all of the identities and memories of these other people.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, why does she want to help?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't seem like a very Marina thing to do. What's in it for her? But she does try to help discover who these people are. And then when she figures out who they are, she wasn't just like, okay, whatever. She went, took action against Fogg to force him to reverse those spells that he put on them. And if he wouldn't, the same thing would happen to him.
Mm-hmm.
Something that never happened to Fogg. And so I think it's not just like, oh, it's helping move the plot along in this episode, but I think it's like very core to Marina's experiences and her anger and inability to trust people. Because if people can take memories of even themselves away from you, how can you trust anyone? Anyone could have done this to you, right? And so I thought it was interesting that for her, it decreases trust. But for the monster, that's not necessarily true.
Mm.
You know, he projects onto Quentin what he thinks is happening. When Quentin is trying to help maybe save Enyalias or something. Or not Enyalias, but the...
Servant.
Servant of, yeah. First, Mostralia's like, stops him. And then he's like, oh, I see. You were trying to add to the play.
Mm.
You know, so like he projects what he thinks or what he wants to be happening onto Quentin. And so he has this trust rather than this mistrust, which mm-hmm. is interesting. He obviously doesn't trust the gods, but maybe this creature that's so beneath his power level, he does trust, because what can you do to me? I found their perspectives very interesting. And then obviously the heartbreaking moment with Marina, who she, the identity she based Fogg's mm-hmm. new fake one on, being her father who was unhoused. And she makes the comment about having to bury him. And it's very not clear, and this is Marina we're talking about, so it's very not clear mm-hmm. whether it was a sad burying or whether she killed him and needed to bury him after that. And so just adding that to the layer of her mistrust and her, the pain, that she's experienced, and forcing that on to a person who has also caused her, or a different version of herself, so much pain. I found, just really interesting.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, that's really, really interesting, the parallel there. And I was thinking a bit about that, too, with the monster, because the monster is so childlike in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing him say that the gods took from him a part of him that knows things
mm-hmm.
is
raises
questions about, okay, what part was that? Was that a more mature part, a part that could mature more?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that one of the reasons he has this more childlike nature? Or are they unrelated? I honestly don't know, but it definitely, it is obviously dehumanizing and infantilizing in a way to mm-hmm. take someone's knowledge, to think that you can, that you know better for them what they should know.
Mm-hmm.
And I can understand those reactions, but I really like your focus on how that impacts their trust of people, and what we see with the monster with that is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously what happened to our main cast.
Yeah, yeah.
They took away the part that knows things as well.
Exactly.
And saying that this will protect them, but is it?
Exactly.
Because Quentin might have been more protected earlier if he knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what about you? Whose POV were you thinking about?
I was thinking of Julia / Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, I find her journey here to be quite interesting as someone who's, you know, finally in break bills, mm-hmm. but now she can't do magic, and she doesn't understand why. And Fogg is the only person who seems to have faith in her. And she's afraid of getting kicked out, right? She goes to Todd because she thinks he can help her cheat in order to pass things.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's worried that, yeah, she'll be expelled without that. And that's before she finds out that Fogg is leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, when she finds out that Fogg is leaving, she goes to his office and she confronts him about it. And I appreciate her honesty there and her logic there, where she's like, of course I would do this. Not only are people going to do this if they care about you, but also because my position here is very tenuous. You're the only person who's given me any information. And that has been pretty little. and so, you know, why I can't do magic, it just doesn't make sense. And I appreciate how she is able to realize that the story's about her.
Mm-hmm. She's very astute.
Absolutely.
Even when she's not her.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't replace her brain entirely.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, her ability to kind of recognize that it's about her and therefore make new conclusions, ask new questions, and challenge that existence to make the choice to try to get back her identity, even if he says that it would be dangerous for her,
mm-hmm.
I think is really, really interesting. One side element that I also found interesting from her perspective is when she's at the cottage and she's talking to Todd and she has to tell him to get her a drink,
mm-hmm.
because she doesn't have the magic to fill up the drinks, which is how he's filling up the drinks.
Mm. Oh, I love that moment. I should have talked about that in Setting in Society, like, as a lens for ableism.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
There's been so many times where things are like that, where people just make assumptions about me of, like, what I can do or what I can eat or what, you know. And it's just like, are you going to make accommodations for me or am I just standing here in pain, you know? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assumed you would have said that, but
I know, right?
I think an interesting connection, because even as she is trying her hardest here at Break Bills, she is in a way disabled by her lack of being able to use magic.
Mm-hmm.
The spell that was put on her that makes it so she can't access the magic.
Well, not just that, but because of the choice she made to use her magic, you know, to reform the keys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, her choice then to basically do whatever she needs to become whole again is just such a great Julia moment. And I think also shows Julia at the end of season 3, not a Julia that we saw in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
Because she goes and she's willing to risk everything, right? Fogg tells her to be cautious. Instead, she goes and she dies over and over and over again. And she's nonchalant about it, right? She gets attacked by it once, is told that she died, but now she's up and she's okay. So she's like, well, let's just keep trying, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's using magical theory, even though she can't do magic.
Exactly, right? And she's showing, you know, her stubbornness, especially how she can be stubborn when she knows something is wrong,
mm-hmm.
right? She's not going to just let something go. She won't just let the fairies' enslavement go. She won't just let Reynard be out there hurting people, mm-hmm. right? She's someone who's going to keep fighting. And in this case, she's fighting for herself, but she's also fighting what she thinks is something that, yeah, that took part of her away from her. And she's not just going to let that go. And so she'll literally just keep pushing, putting her life on the line until the very end, which is what she does. And so, yeah, I think this episode is a really great example of her, even though she's on her own compared to the rest of the main cast, she is still has the growth and the characteristics that we've seen of Julia in the previous three seasons. Mm-hmm. And that those elements of her character are still making really important impacts on the narrative. She's driving the narrative. She has such narrative agency here mm-hmm. that, you know, it's just really so wonderful to see her maintain, because as we've talked about this watch through, we've seen more and more of that in her.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she would rather die than have this piece of her missing mm-hmm. because she has that part of her personality that like has to puzzle everything out. And I think that's why she's different. Well, one, obviously, this Kim facade that's mm-hmm. been put on her, but also different than Julia at the very end of season two, mm. where she had left Breakbills. Alice was still there, or at least for a while. Josh, Quentin, yeah. learning just the theory of magic. But for her, she knew magic existed. She knew so much about magic and had been able to do some amazing things and work with amazing magicians. So at that point, she's going to find something else to do with her life. But this Kim state is just learning about this. And how could she stop now when mm-hmm. when she knows it's available? And now this person is telling her that, like, you're capable of all of these things, and she knows somehow I was before, and, you know, like, yeah, these are the choices that Julia's gonna make.
Totally, yeah. All right, well, why don't we finish up by revisiting the title of this episode, Lost, Found, Fucked.
I mean, it's the perfect magician's title. It's
an excellent magician's title.
So good.
It is rough on SEO. Because yes. when we were trying to look it up, it kept coming up as lost, found, .. ed.
Yeah, we're like, ed? And then we're like,
And then finally, I got to one website that actually spelled out F'''''ed, and I was like, yeah, oh,
you need that okay. first letter.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah. But it's just perfect for all of them in so many ways.
Absolutely. And yeah, for all of them other than Julia, that is basically what happens. They're lost in it, they find their identities, but then they get fucked.
Well, I mean, but for Julia ended different, but during, I mean, she true. Was.
That's
like,
true. She did die a bunch of times.
And one of those, like, the only person who believes I can do magic is going to leave, and I'm going to get kicked out. And yeah. It wasn't great.
Yeah. But just, the end of the episode, we get some pretty dire circumstances for most of our protagonists. So, yeah.
Yes. So the person in the least dire circumstance is Alice, who's imprisoned by the library.
That's true.
With Santa.
Okay, well, if that wraps up this episode, what's happening next time on The Magicians?
So we are going to be on season 4, episode 3, The Bad News Bear, where Quentin almost gets defeated by a stuffed animal.
I get it. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode of Geek Between the Lines. You can find links to our website, our social media, and our Patreon in the episode description. We hope that you'll join us on Patreon. We just had our monthly Zoom meetup, and it was a ton of fun.
Yeah.
So sign up on Patreon so you can join us for the next one. We want to thank Kimberly Kuniko at Lacelet for designing our logo. You can find our designs at lacelet.com, Instagram, or Patreon. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week. Until then,
geek out.